From my microphones in downtown Washington, D.C., this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. You know, we're beginning to do a series, and we've been requested, in fact, by listeners to do a series on the impact of community organizations and what community organizations bring to the game in terms of crime control. So we're about to do that, a couple in D.C., a couple throughout the United States. Today, I'm really pleased to have Tyrone Curtis Parker. Tyrone is extraordinarily well-known within the D.C. community. He's extraordinarily well-known in terms of the former offender community throughout the United States. He is the executive director of the Alliance of Concerned Men, which is a 501c3, if anybody out there has any money, a nonprofit organization. Tyrone Curtis Parker comes from the neighborhoods of Washington, D.C. He grew up here. When he came out of the prison system, Tyrone wanted to restore the communities that he saw around him to a better shape, a better place. To do that, the Alliance of Concerned Men does a wide variety of things. I'm just going to go over them briefly. Gang intervention, substance abuse, life skills, leadership, after-school programs, even programs in terms of younger individuals who abscond from the care of juvenile justice facilities. Tyrone says the bottom line between all of this, or for all of this, is public safety. And I couldn't agree with him more on that. And the input of the larger community. Before we get on to our conversation with Tyrone, our usual commercial, I want to thank everybody for all of their letters, cards, phone calls, emails, you name it, we get it. If you want to get in touch with us directly, you can do so via email. It's Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D dot Sipes, S-I-P, not T, folks, but P as in peculiar or pumpernickel, S-I-P-E-S at C-S-O-S-A.gov. Or you can follow me via Twitter. That's twitter.com/Len, L-E-N, Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, no break. Back to Tyrone Curtis Parker. Welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thanks a million for having me, Leonard.
You know, this is interesting, Tyrone, because we were having the usual discussion that I have with people who have been previously incarcerated, that words are extraordinarily powerful, and that, you know, this whole issue of previously incarcerated people, which I don't disagree at all, that that's the way that we should frame the conversation. But the vast majority of the people out there are going to say, oh, you're talking about ex-offenders. Mm-hmm. You're talking about ex-cons. You're talking about whatever it is. And those are words that you all feel have a negative concept and hold the ex-offender community down, correct?
No question about it. I think when we begin to look at the terminology of ex-offender, jailbird, convict, terms such as that has a strong tendency of basically retaining a person's spirit, and this is the common denominator, to be able to uplift this population so that they can feel that they are a part of the greater world, the bigger world, and make contributions to it.
And but you do understand that even the most politically correct people out there, especially newspaper reporters, do refer to former offenders as former offenders or as ex-offenders.
No question about it. I understand that it's a living and learning situation and that we've got to educate individuals to how to address this population.
The Alliance of Concerned Men, how many people are we talking about who are part of this?
All right. Now, we're talking about a staff of about 45 individuals.
Yeah, it's not a small group.
Not at this point here. We've been able to basically bring individuals in that has a commitment to their community to make a transformation there, Leonard.
But are most of these people previously incarcerated
no
people?
No question about it. I would say, Leonard, that particular staff, about 75% of our working staff is previously incarcerated persons.
Now, what happens with this individual? He or she comes out of the prison system, and the whole idea is to work within the community to take that individual's knowledge, to take that individual's power, to take that individual's savvy, if you will, and apply it to people who are struggling themselves in terms of substance abuse or in terms of crime or in terms of violence, and to directly intervene in their lives and help them find another way. That's the bottom line, correct?
I think you're correct. We look at it from the perspective that the solution is in the problem, that we've got to begin to understand exactly what the solutions are and therefore begin to deal with that from that perspective. Leonard, we have been extraordinarily successful because we work with a number of prisons around the country,
mm-hmm.
Where we have our programs, what we call our Concerned Fathers Program, rebuilding.
Well, wait a minute. Let me back up. Concerned Fathers Program.
Yeah,
okay. How many prisons are you working with?
Basically, at this point, about 5 different prisons across the country.
Wow. That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So what's the message there in terms of concerned fathers?
The term is that that a man's responsibility is not relinquished upon confinement. That's the concept, to be able to rebuild that man during the time that he's incarcerated so he'll understand what his total responsibilities are. And it's not just a matter of doing time and not making a contribution. We began the rebuilding process upon that man coming into the facilities and becoming a part of the movement that's in those particular facilities to make a difference.
And nobody's going to disagree with that, certainly. www.allianceofconcernedmen.com is a website, www.allianceofconcernedmen.com. Tyrone, look, this is what I get the sense from decades of working with people coming out of the prison system. I worked with them directly and was a spokesperson in Maryland for the Maryland Department of Public Safety. So indirectly and directly, when I used to work with folks in the street, is that they come out and they are totally overwhelmed by the process. Whether or not they want to go straight or whether or not they don't want to go straight, Maybe that's not the point. Maybe the point is that they come out and things are so overwhelming to them that it's really difficult to put themselves on a proper footing. And maybe what your group does, and maybe what the faith-based groups do, and the other groups out there working with former offenders, maybe what they do is give them a sense of structure that helps them come to grips with the fact that they're back in open society, and they still have that substance abuse problem, and they still have kids to take care of, and they still need a job, and they still have anger issues to deal with in terms of their own upbringings. At least what this does is to give them a foothold and people and a structure and an organization where they can basically begin that process of trying to find who they are and what they want to contribute. Am I right or wrong?
You know what, Leonard, I think to a very large degree, you are absolutely correct. I think one of the components that the Alliance tend to look at is basically due to our own experiences. I'm previously incarcerated myself, still is on parole. Mm-hmm. I've been on parole for the last 38 years of my life. So I understand the contents of what's occurring in regards to the man itself. Having lost a son also during the time I was incarcerated.
You lost a son.
I lost a son to gang violence. He was killed basically by being at the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm. But I also think that due to my absentee, to be able to be a part of his life, also made a contribution to this.
Well, that's a lot of guilt to carry.
Oh, well, I don't think it's guilt. I think it's looking at situations and beginning to rebuild from what have occurred, what some folks would consider as bad, only transforming good from it. We all look at situations that we can actually propel ourselves. It's almost like having a ball, I think, Leonard, and throwing that ball down on the ground. Mm-hmm. The harder you throw that ball on the ground, the higher it would bounce.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that sounds like pulpit preaching. The reality is that they're coming here and they're scared half to death. Now, you know, people say all the time, you know, Leonard, stop it with this crap about former offenders and how they feel. We don't care how they felt. They went to prison. They did something bad. They deserve their time. You know, I don't mind you doing programs about domestic violence, Leonard, and I don't mind you doing programs about what you do with the police department and the other things that CSOSA does. But, you know, this ex-offender stuff starts getting on my nerves after a certain amount of time. And my response is, look, either we want them as being taxpayers or tax burdens. But to get them there involves a heck of a lot of hard work.
And you know what, Leonard, I think you're absolutely correct again. One of the things that actually occurred, you know, they're there to be punished and not for punishment, you know, continuation of it. And I think that that's a key component, because if you treat a person if they are an animal, or you do not treat them humane, then you produce someone that's coming back out to make hazard on their own community.
How many people in your experience, Tyrone, when they come out of the prison system, really are committed to the fundamental process of dealing with their addiction, reuniting with their kids, finding work, doing what the rest of us do on a day-to-day basis? What percentage would you put on that total population who really want to make the change?
You know what, Leonard, this may be a biased reply, but I would easily say 99.9. And my reasons for saying that at that point, that when you find a man that actually come out, he do not want to go back again to be treated like a dog or an animal in that perspective. So at the concept of the question, the large majority don't ever want to go back. But as you say, the conditions of the world produce certain situations that individuals do not have the capabilities to be able to transform or to deal with. But this is when it becomes our obligation to be able to have the programs put in place to begin to work with these individuals for public safety purposes, if nothing else.
Yeah, and you know, that the larger issue is, do we have all the programs necessary? Do we have all the programs put in place to deal with mental health, to deal with substance abuse, to deal with reuniting fathers with their kids, to find employment? Are all those programs in place?
You know, Leonard, no, to a very large degree. However, is it on the agenda? When we look at emergency situations, we look at the chicken flu, the pig flu, emergencies that's occurring, and you begin to direct resources to deal with a public tragedy. This is a public tragedy. When you look at the District of Columbia, young men between the ages of 18 to 35, one out of every two is under some form of judicial restraint. Nationally, one out of every three is under some form of judicial restraint. This is a sin. What's occurring in regards to this population?
And people would say that, you know, it's terribly wrong for it to be that way. On the flip side, you have lots of people who say, hey, you know, Leonard, that's why we have public schools. All the person had to do was to go to school, graduate from school, get himself a trade, stay away from drugs, stay away from crime, and he wouldn't be in that set of circumstances to begin with. So, you know, in a competing world, the world competes every day. It's Haiti or it's taking care of our elderly citizens or taking care of our youngest citizens or putting money into schools or putting money into former offenders. Different people are going to say, you know, Leonard, they had a wonderful opportunity. So the government gives them that opportunity. They just chose not to take it. Why am I going to be that concerned about them?
Leonard, you remind me of my grade school teacher who usually always say the right thing at the right time. However, Leonard, I think when we start looking at collaborative damage in regard to an individual, once you get a charge, once you're actually indicted for anything and given the sentence, from the rest of your life, you pay for that one situation that you had that have occurred. That's the first component of this all. That's why we begin to look at language, why language is so very important. How do we begin to reverse these situations? Sure, opportunities were given. Sure, somebody slipped and failed. But should that be a karma for the rest of their lives? In this society, this is the point that we're at.
And that's really the component that we're talking about. I think all of us, now I've never robbed anybody, nor have I ever raped anybody. I have a hard time with there by the grace of God, go I. But I have done, and virtually everybody has done things where they could find themselves serving some time in prison or jail. I mean, even drinking and driving.
Right, absolutely.
When you're younger and you're stupid, the question becomes, you know, okay, so the person did more than that. Mm-hmm. Is it within society's larger best interest to have that hanging over that person's head for the rest of their lives?
Leonard, there are very few things that an individual should have done, did that should be held over their heads for the rest of their lives. You're basically taking away all of the rights of a human being in the context of labeling them or the collaborative damage concept. This person can no longer vote. He can no longer get employment. I mean, housing, the whole nine.
I have a friend of mine. I wouldn't call him a friend, an associate that I've known for years, did a series of armed robberies, served time in the Maryland prison system. He's now sells insurance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He now makes more money than you and I put together.
Right.
And I've been to his house.
That's right.
Beautiful.
That's right.
Beautiful kids. Beautiful wife. Beautiful cars. Ex-offender. Scared half to death that people will know that background. And the thing is that, you know, what he's told me is that, look, he says, you know, I can be one of the down and outers. Mm-hmm. I can be one of the people that constantly goes back to prison. And if the taxpayer wants to spend all that money on me, then that's fine. But, you know, I'm putting so much money back into the tax base by being employed and buying all these things and being as successful as I am. You know, that's an extreme example, but that is the heart and soul of it. What do we want from people?
You know what, Leonard, and I don't know if we have the time. First, very brief story. We did a rally for ex-offenders, previously incarcerated persons, across the street from the White House about 4 years ago. And this guy had a beautiful picture. It was of him. It was an action fact. It was himself and his son, dressed up in old traditional jail clothes. And they had ball and chain that they had actually made with a cross. Or maybe the cross had to be about an 8-foot cross. And on that cross, they had a sign. And it had, Christians, have some redemption for me. Have some mercy for me. Christians, have some mercy for me. And I think that's so symbiotic in the context of showing redemption and showing compassion and showing concern for individuals. When do we get to the point that we have that in place and begin to reach out?
And what would be the impact, indeed, if we did have the capacity to deal with everybody? What would be the impact on public safety? What would be the crime rate? If you had the 800,000 or so people who come out of the prison system in this country every year back into their communities, if they all had the wherewithal applied to them in terms of mentors like your organization does, in terms of the services that your organization provides, in terms of job training, job assistance, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, a place to live, and a faith-based person there to guide them and to ride them hard if necessary. If they had all of that, what would it mean for the safety of the average citizen? That's what it comes down to, correct?
That's exactly what it comes down to.
That's what, and that's the larger question. I want to reintroduce our guest today. It is Tyrone Parker, the Alliance of Concerned Men, extraordinarily well-known group in Washington, D.C., and certainly a group with a national reputation within the reentry community. www.allianceofconcernedmen.com, www.allianceofconcernedmen.com, 501c3, which means your tax, your contributions are tax deductible. So let's get back to Tyrone. And so that's, I guess, Tyrone, that is the larger issue. If you're saying that 90% of all offenders and more, when they come out of prison system, don't want to go back, and that's been my experience at the same time, but they're back on the street, they're not quite, it's not that they don't want to work, they're not quite sure how to go about it, and they start hanging with folks on the corner, and they start passing a reefer, and they start being loud, and the neighbors get ticked off, and they call the police, and boom, this person is back in the system almost overnight. Now, what I'm describing, is that unusual?
No, not at all. And I think it reminds me of this great holiday that we just got through celebrating, Martin Luther King. And Martin makes mention of it's one thing to give a beggar a quarter, but it is another thing to deal with the system that had created this beggar.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as we begin to look at how do we come out of this maze, we got to also look at means to be able to create a safer community, a healthier family, and a better person.
Mm-hmm.
This becomes the common denominator. And one, I find it difficult for an individual to be able to tell me anytime this country can go to the moon or be able to tell me where there's water in Africa or any other country underneath the ground, cannot tell me how to deal with this impact of incarceration at the numbers that is occurring.
Every night they go home, every night the average citizen, who they're making the decision as to whether or not to fund this or not fund it. Every night that person goes home and they watch the 6 o'clock news and they watch the 11 o'clock news and they watch the litany of man's inhumanity against man. And you and I both know that the term former offender or whatever, previously incarcerated person was responsible for that crime. And people say, if I got money to give, it's going to go to the Red Cross for the Haitian Release Fund. I'm sorry. I just don't have all that compassion for a group that is so responsible for harming the larger society. Is that not what they say? Is that not the reality of as to why we don't have more resources for former offenders?
You know what, Leonard? I think it's also in the concept of it's easier for individuals to get resources to be able to retain or to jail this population in the contents of priorities. I think that, Leonard, when you start looking at priorities in this country, you start looking at, is it more beneficial for us to channel our money into bombs and planes and defense than it is into human services?
Okay, programs. But they're going to say daycare. They're going to say programs for the elderly. They're going to say all sorts of other things beyond money for former offenders.
And you're absolutely correct. But the question that I ask now is, what type of society do they really want?
Okay, that's a really interesting question. Do they want safety or don't they want safety? Because there seems to be enough research out there now that indicates, and it's not all uniform, and it doesn't march in cookie-cutter lockstep fashion, and it's not like the reductions are in the 70 to 80% range. They're closer in the 10 to 20% range. But if you can have a 20% impact on individuals coming out of the prison system in any city in this country. That 20% of them are no longer involved in crime. In fact, they're now working and taking care of their kids and tax. That's a huge impact on public safety. That's a huge impact on money we don't have to spend in terms of taking care of kids who have no father.
You know, and again, Leonard, you're absolutely correct. I think when you start looking at the impact of programs that have really made an impact in regards to public safety, you've got to look at the District of Columbia, where we're celebrating here 45-year low in regards to homicides in this particular city. Mm-hmm. I know when the Alliance first started, homicides was almost at 500 a year.
And you guys are out there on the streets night after night after night, working with these communities, working with people who are ready to go to war with each other, and sitting down and basically saying, "No, look, my man, there's a better way of doing it, and this is how." And somehow, some way, you're having an impact.
You know, and then that's because we put everything on the table. Every means of resource was actually put into that equation. We utilize even the guys that's locked up mm-hmm. to be able to help us in regards to facilitating truce mm-hmm. because we understand their impact in regards to their reputations and their relationships and their love for their community. So why not take that energy level and direct it into the best interest of public safety for that man's family and the community on the greater good?
And this is something that the ex-offender community, mm-hmm. the previously incarcerated person community, this is the community that's leading this.
Absolutely, because it's there. One of the things that have occurred, Leonard, is that we've come to realize who is really feeling the brunt of this particular impact in regards to violence in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And by process of elimination, it's us.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen times where federal prisons, Otisville, New York, federal prison, was willing to do a conference with the Metropolitan Police to deal with gang violence.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen times where this population have negotiated to help us with truth.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the demonstration of public safety and healthy building of communities in the personnel cells are there in these facilities,
mm-hmm.
waiting to be utilized. Our greatest challenge is how do we include them in the conversation to utilize the resources that's already there.
So the bottom line is that it's don't give me a dime, let me make your life safer.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying is that we're not here for a handout. We're here to take leadership.
And for redemption as well.
Oh, I understand that. But there's such a huge difference between give me money for programs
and let me take ownership
versus let me take leadership of my own life. By the way, help me out in the process of doing that. But we're actively involved and we're effective.
Absolutely. And then it's a win-win situation.
Yes, it is.
Nobody loses. I'm basically working with up in Otisville, and these guys have produced a document. And they say basically stating, select the best prison program that it is in mm-hmm. regards to public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a list of criteria that would actually produce who would be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Later, when you start looking at our population, men that's locked up, willing to come forth to create programs that would be in the best interest of the community, as well as their selves,
mm-hmm.
man, how can anybody lose with that type of a concept on the table?
But it's interesting. It's why we do these shows, Tyrone, is because the average person is simply not exposed to this. What the average person is exposed to is Channel 4. Not picking on Channel 4. Mm-hmm. Could be Channel 5. Could be Channel 4. It doesn't matter. Every night after night after night after night, and people saying, I'm getting sick, the god of crime mm-hmm. and what it's doing to my community. And by the way, the people responsible for it, I'm not favorably predisposed towards them. Isn't that the bottom line? The former offender community, the previously incarcerated person, gets far more negative publicity than positive publicity.
And that's simply because we had not did well in regards to PR. We have not did well to build off of the successes that we have had in our community. We have not did well in regards to communication and public relationships to individuals. We have
mm-hmm.
not did well at all in that particular area.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I know, the case is there that can be presented
mm-hmm.
to be able to show another side of this particular population.
There are organizations throughout the country that are former offender, previously incarcerated person operated.
Mm-hmm.
Delancey Street.
Right.
Comes Excellent. To mind. And, you know, I studied Delancey Street when I left the police and was in college and studying criminology. And, you know, that concept goes back 20, 25 years of former offenders basically saying, we are taking charge of ourselves, mm-hmm. and we're going to accept other former offenders, previously incarcerated people, into our community, and they're going to have to follow our rules. But if you basically can toe the line, and if you basically can prove your worth, we will help you transform from tax burden to taxpayer. So this concept is not a new concept, right. and people need to understand that right. it's happening throughout the country in one way, shape, or form. It's just not publicized.
That's what it is. You're absolutely correct. No question about that. I think that when we begin to do a better job in regards to PR pertaining to this population here, then we'll be able to basically see a transformation. The same thing have occurred in other great movements when you start looking mm-hmm. at the handicapped disabilities mm-hmm. or different movements mm-hmm. where they basically came together and began a whole campaign mm-hmm. and transformed things.
Well, we just have a couple minutes left. I just want to reemphasize one thing. Again, you're free to criticize. I represent a parole and probation organization, a federally funded, thank God, parole and probation organization. we freely admit that we don't have everything that we would like to have in terms of drug treatment and in terms of mental health treatment. You know, the programs that we have are substantial, and we are grateful to the taxpayers for doing them. But there is an issue of not just with us, but every organization in the country, whether it's faith-based, whether it's parole and probation, whether it's community-based. It is a matter of resources.
No,
it is. Is it not?
Leonard, I heard you appropriately say, thank God.
No, we're federally funded. Yeah. We have far more than most parole and probation agencies in this country. No. I mean, we have an entire wing of a hospital devoted to drug treatment that we have financed ourselves through the taxpayers.
And it's making a significant difference.
Yes, it is. Yes,
no
it is. But the average parole and probation agency in this country doesn't possess a dime for drug treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So we are lucky in the District of Columbia that we do have these resources that we can bring to the table. But the question is treating 25% of the high-risk population enough?
Leonard, as we begin to turn this ocean liner around, we're getting a grip on it. In the even while all the ships may not come in or dock at the same time, they're still coming in. The key is that there is a model in place which other jurisdictions can begin to look at and begin to build from in the context of success. And I think the District of Columbia is that particular model at this particular point. Because as you said, thank God the resources are there.
At least in terms of federal resources. But I mean, again, you know, we within the criminal justice system, we sit back and we recognize two things. A, regardless of what we say and regardless of bluster and regardless of whatever confidence that we put on the table, it is the larger community that is going to make us or break us in terms of crime control, not the criminal justice system. And number two, it is groups like yours that are going to have an impact on people coming out of the prison system, not folks like us. It's going to be the larger organizations that take responsibility, that step up to the plate, and who advocate and who convince people that this is something worth supporting.
No question about it. I often say, Leonard, a healthy father makes a good family. A good family makes a strong community, and a strong community makes a great country. And this is the return factor on what's occurring. Here in the district, you have so many great organizations. Ceasefire, you have clergy, police, community. You have Sasha Bruce. You just have a collaboration of excellent programs that have basically maybe not been on the same page at the same time, but had the same goal. And the goal was public safety.
And the bottom line, and this is worth repeating one more time before we close out the program, in your opinion, is that the great majority of individuals coming out of the prison system don't want to go back. Who would?
No, there's no question about it. The large majority of individuals that have come out of these particular facilities don't ever want to go back because they understand their family, they understand their selves, they understand their community, and they understand that they do not want to be treated like an animal.
But the larger analysis is that somebody, it can't just be the family. That person may need mental health issues. It may have mental health issues. That person may have substance mm-hmm. abuse issues. That person may have dropped out after the eighth grade and needs hard skills in terms of finding work or being trained for work. That's the problem.
I am.
And do we have that structure of not just programs, but of fellowship, either from the faith community? When I say faith community, I don't not necessarily mean the Christian community. Mm-hmm. It could be the Islamic community. Mm-hmm. It could be the Jewish community.
Absolutely.
It could be anybody.
Community.
The faith community. Sometimes, you know, they need big brothers and big sisters to guide them.
You know, Atlanta, it's no question about that. But I'm a thorough believer that this whole process begins with the community, but inside these correctional facilities, where they can build capacity around their cells by support systems that's already in place. The Alliance of Concerned Men is doing an extraordinary job with that. We have produced a manual that we feel can make a major difference. And that's our common denominator. Let's take a look at doing some out of the box.
Our guest today has been Tyrone Parker, the Executive Director of the Alliance of Concerned Men. I'm going to repeat the web address one more time, www.allianceofconcernedmen. That's all one word, by the way, www.allianceofconcernedmen.com. It's a 501c3, which means whatever money that you have, Mr. Rich Person, sitting back and then you've got $25,000 to spare, it is a tax deduction. Really want to express my appreciation to Tyrone, and hopefully he'll come back in about 4 months or so to talk about other aspects of working with communities in Washington, D.C., in the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, this is D.C. Public Safety. Once again, thank you very much for your contacts and your suggestions and your criticisms. We don't care. We'll take them all. Reach me either through the comments box at media.csosa.gov. That's how a lot of people do it. Or they email me directly at Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, .sipes, at csosa.gov. Or follow me via Twitter at twitter.com/LenSipes. I want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.